Computer, initialize holosuite.
Welcome to another broadcast of The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Perry.
And I'm your host, David. Tonight we're talking about Season 1, Episode 15, If Wishes Were Horses. Before we continue, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts as The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast.
Absolutely, and we would love for you to find us. Send us questions, comments, concerns, but again, as always, be polite, be respectful, or you won't hear from us. So, as David said, tonight we're talking about If Wishes Were Horses, but before we jump into that, first I want to say Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everyone listening. This is our Christmas episode, because it is December 24th, you get to hear us before Christmas. Great for you. Your early present.
Yeah, but Merry Christmas, everyone, and Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah, Happy New Year. Well, we might be around. I don't know. We might be around and recording on the New Year as well. We'll see. Get back to you on that. Also, want to do another little bit of housekeeping here. So in a couple of episodes, I think it was actually two, episode 13, I talked about not talking about Star Trek Discovery, or any of the new Trek shows, because we were going to stand in solidarity with our European fan base, who, because of some hijinks that Paramount Plus was pulling, the new season was not going to be available to them until 2022. But nice update, they have since changed all that, and now, no matter where you are, you can watch the show right now with the rest of us. So that just means that, one, hooray, congratulations, I'm glad everybody can now watch the show, but two, now I can make references again. So references may pop up for Discovery now. I don't have to hold anything back on that. So if you haven't seen the new season of Discovery, again, of course you can watch it on Paramount Plus. That's where they want you to watch it. I don't think you can really find it anywhere else. I think it was taken off Netflix now. So yeah, go to Paramount Plus, watch it. You will find that and all of the Treks there. All of them are there now, and they're slowly but surely pulling them off of other platforms. So you might as well just go ahead and sign up for Paramount Plus. It's pretty cheap, so you can watch all your Trek and keep up with us. All right.
Woohoo.
Yeah. So, David, any plans for Christmas? What are you going to be doing?
So my niece has her birthday on the 23rd. So every year now it's going to be a birthday / Christmas season from now on with her, which is fantastic. She'll be 4 this year, which is just crazy. She's growing up so fast. But yeah, we'll just be with family. The pandemic has kind of been over-ish for a little while now. I know things are still a little tight in some places, but looking forward to seeing family. I was able to see them last year. I live close to most of my family, but just being able to be more free and open and spend time with family will be great. How about you?
Well, yeah, the COVID situation has, I guess, decreased somewhat, but we're ramping back up with variant Omicron that's making its way around at this time. And yes, it is Omicron. As all Star Trek fans know, you pronounce it Omicron. We've been pronouncing it this way for decades. I'm sorry. Omicron. You're not gonna win this one. You need to go back and watch some more Trek, David. You will see it's Omicron. But anyway, at least that's better than some of the other variants of this variant that I've heard. I've heard Omicron. I've heard Omicron. I've heard all kinds of stuff. But guys, once again, Star Trek leading the way. Please go watch a couple episodes of TNG. They will tell you how to say it. I promise. It's in there. We got you covered. All right. But no, I plan to spend the majority of the time with my family. I think we might actually be family light this time. What I mean by that is it's probably predominantly going to be me and my daughter. We might see my my older sister a little bit, you know. But for the most part, I'm trying to subdue things a little bit because I want to just, you know, kind of start new traditions with my kid. And I feel like it's to do that, I need to separate just a little bit from what my family does because sometimes that can be a little overwhelming. And since it is just right. me and my daughter and I, I feel like it's very important to establish things that are just us. Because you never know when something may happen and we can't get to family. So I want to have a good backup that she has a good memory for. So we're going to be doing that. We're going to be doing that.
Cool. Very good.
But yeah, all right. If wishes were horses, I have been waiting for this episode. One of many.
It's a good one.
It is. Do you want to do the recap, or do you want me to do it?
Sure, I can do it.
Go ahead.
All right, so at the beginning of this episode, we have three little small scenes of kind of life on the station. We have Quark and Odo arguing at the bar. Odo is once again haranguing Quark, and Quark is this time more peeved than usual because it's been 3 days since any ships have come to the station. But, you know, he can still make use of the holosuites. In fact, he starts theorizing, you know, I could start using the holosuites for families. When the families come, I could create little things for children to play. And Odo is a bit disgusted because he knows that the holosuites aren't used for so pleasant a idea. They're used for more shady and nefarious and unpleasant business. But one of the things that it is used for, we see Jake Sisko walking by with a bat and glove, a baseball bat and glove in hand. So he is going to go play some baseball up in the holosuites. And then we move on and we see Bashir trying to profess his love for Jadzia Dax. And she very flatly friend zones him in a quite hilarious scene. She asks him, "You profess your love for me, but you weren't having trouble with that one woman from the secretary to that one, you know, guy over there." And then there was the Betazoid woman last week before that, so I don't think you are really that upset if I put you in the friend zone. And Bashir crumples and kind of chuckles to himself and just kind of gives in and just, all right, fine. And then finally we get a sweet scene with the O'Brien family. O'Brien is reading to Molly, his daughter, the story of Rumpelstiltskin, and she very cutely keeps saying Rumpelstiltskin every time her turn to say the name comes up. And O'Brien and his wife are leaving the room, and they're going to go to bed themselves when Molly comes back out and says, "Hey, Rumpelstiltskin's in my room." And O'Brien goes in, and there's Rumpelstiltskin. And my goodness, Rumpelstiltskin appears, and then Dr. Bashir is being beset by Jadzia Dax, and lo and behold, one of the great baseball players of all time is following Jake home from playing baseball. And so we quickly realize that something is going wrong, that maybe the holosuites are somehow able to operate outside of their normal parameters. And so we are now experiencing throughout the station a number of imaginary people and beings and scenarios are manifesting themselves throughout the station. And so Jadzia Dax, the real one, starts theorizing that there is something wrong because they were noticing that Thoron particles were building up in something or other. And so they're not sure exactly what that means, but they start theorizing that there's something wrong. And then they realize that basically a proto wormhole, or a black hole, I should say, is starting to be created near the station. And so they do a number of things to try and stop this station from being destroyed by this black hole. They shoot a torpedo into the black hole using a method that failed about 200 years or so before when some Vulcans encountered a similar scenario. And so they try an updated version of the same attempt to stop the black hole. Of course, in that previous attempt, that was a failure, but they theorized that because technology has improved, they can do it this time successfully. They try it, and it fails, and so things are getting really bad. And while everything is going on, the baseball player whose name I'm forgetting at the moment. We'll have to go back and revisit that. Buck Bukai. I just had it pulled up. The Jadzia Dax, the one who's very amorous of Bashir, like he would want, and the Rumpelstiltskin character, all three of them get together, and they reveal that they actually are trying to accomplish something. They weren't just poofing into existence. They're talking to each other like, we gotta keep trying. Now, the fake Jadzia Dax is all over Bashir the entire time, and no real way is she an actual recreation of Jadzia Dax. She doesn't have any sort of scientific know-how or doesn't pretend to. All she wants is just for Bashir to give her attention. However, Rumpelstiltskin claims that he does have his powers, that he can turn Strawn to gold, and at the end of this episode claims that he could turn this black hole into, he could stop the black hole from expanding, but he demands Molly as payment, you know, O'Brien's daughter. And O'Brien's like, this is ridiculous. You're a figment of my imagination. You're not real. And in the middle of this massive, you know, the station is rumbling and everything's going wrong and they can't stop the black hole, Sisko realizes, wait a minute. We have been manifesting these beings and all of this stuff just because we believe in it. Something's just, we believe them to exist, and so they manifest into existence. That must be what's happening to the station. This black hole isn't real. And so he tells everyone, okay, just believe that what you're seeing is not there, or that the things aren't, you know, that there's no black hole, for example. And so things stop existing. Rumpelstiltskin and Jadzia Dax, the fake one who had bumped her head in the middle of the station shaking, everything disappears. And so Sisko backs to his office and sits down to relax after a stressful day of what was actually nothing. And the baseball player Buck Bukai appears to him and reveals that he and at least some of the others were actual alien beings. We're not exactly sure where they came from, but that they were just kind of there to test them out. He says, you know, we didn't reveal ourselves because I know that the visiting team doesn't always get the best reaction, the best welcome. So Sisko says, well, you know, who are you? What do you have to say? And he says, maybe next year. And he leaves. So we don't get a lot of answers about what truly happened, but we do get a fun little episode where basically every character got a moment to shine, and it was fun to boot. Did I miss anything?
No, you gave a pretty succinct summation of the episode, of course. And, you know, hit those broad strokes, the high points, that's what's important. And as always, if you feel like anything is lacking or you would like to know more, you can go watch the episode. It's like 30 years old. Go watch it. I've already told you earlier where you can find it, what platforms it's going to be on and all that. So please take your time to go watch it. You can pause our episode. I promise we will still be here when you get back, and it will make more sense to you, and you will enjoy it more. Right. But yes, go watch it. We'll be here. So yes, great summation of the episode. You hit a lot of good stuff, but of course there's always more. Some of our favorite points that we're going to talk about. So the first thing that I would like to talk about, we're going to do a little Trek history, and basically it's this trope of the imagination coming to life for our offices, yes, in some way. This little story, this trope, is as old as Trek itself, going all the way back to the original episodes of the original series in the 60s. They did an episode like this. The crew was on a mission to make first contact with an alien species. I think they were called the Kosians or something like that. And they arrive at the planet. There's all these warning buoys telling them to stay away, but they kind of just, you know, ignore that anyway. Turns out that these aliens are actually very powerful telepaths, and they start to make the crew see things that aren't there. The away team beams down. Instead of fighting themselves, you know, in an alien surroundings, they're it's like the Old West to them. Right. And then they find themselves, suddenly they are the old OK Corral gunfight, and they are portraying one side of this. They are the Clantons to the Earps. And, okay, you know, at the last minute in that situation, Spock realizes that this is all, you know, in their heads, and that as long as they believe that they can't be hurt, they won't be. And of course, it works when they show up for the infamous shootout scene. No one is killed, even though the telepathic bad guys pretty much unload on our heroes. But nothing happens because they've all now convinced themselves that this is fake. It's a figment of their imagination, and of course, this allows them to overcome it, and they move on. Now, again, that's a very, very succinct summation of the episode. Go back and watch it. That's not the point. The point is, again, since the 60s, Star Trek has done this story of your mind playing games on you, basically.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, we even see this in Next Generation. David, you had just finished watching that series for us. What episodes can you remember that did that?
Yeah, so I'm thinking of two in particular. Starting with Elementary, Dear Data, we meet the character Moriarty, a holosuite recreated version of the Sherlock Holmes villain. In that episode, they tell the holosuite program to create a Sherlock Holmes character who can defeat Data, which is very important in that episode because they don't tell it to they can defeat Sherlock. Therefore, Data could play Sherlock and defeat a Sherlock character in a story that he had not yet already read and therefore knew the answers to. But no, they tell it to be able to defeat Data. And so the Moriarty in that episode, who is a holosuite character, basically gains sentience. And in that episode, he wants to be allowed to leave the holosuite at some point. And so Picard promises to bring Moriarty into the real world once the technology has been perfected in that way. And that's a season 2 episode. And then I believe it's season 5 where we meet Moriarty again in Ship in a Bottle. Moriarty takes command of the ship. And actually it's a season 6 episode, my apologies. He basically baits the Picard and I believe it's Geordi into the holosuite and convinces them, it turns out by the end of the episode, that he has made the holosuite look like the actual full ship. And so, whereas in the past they would go into the holosuite to go to fictional places, throughout the episode we think we're on the Enterprise, but in fact they've been stuck in the holodeck for the holosuite for the most of the episode. And Moriarty, in that episode, pretends to leave the holodeck. He steps out of the holodeck, and we think he has manifested himself outside in the real world. But when we learn that he has actually just manipulated the holosuite into allowing, or the holodeck, I guess it's the holodeck on the Enterprise, isn't it? The holosuite on Deep Space Nine. But anyway, when he reveals that it's not that he's actually left, that he's still stuck there, they basically program a giant cube to be the entire universe so that he can think that he truly has left, but he's actually still technically stuck as data, I should say, not the character, but data. On a giant chip that he can pretend to go explore the universe as a piece of information in a data cube. And as soon as this episode started and we were starting to manifest beings outside of what assumed to be the holosuite, that's the first episode that immediately stuck to mind, came to mind. And the other ones that tie into that are the character of Leah Brahms, who is the one who developed the Enterprise. She's like the main engineer that created the Enterprise that we see on TNG. And there's two episodes where she appears. And the first one, Geordi uses the holodeck to manifest a fictionalized version of this woman who created the Enterprise so that he can figure out how to fix a certain problem. And this fictionalized version is like 97% accurate to the real woman, according to the computer's estimation of what she would be like. But then in another episode, I believe that's going to be Booby Trap. Booby Trap is the one where he meets the holosuite version of the character, but on the episode Galaxy's Child, the real woman shows up, and she is, of course, different than her holosuite version. She is a real person. She's married, and so where in the first episode, Geordi kind of fell in love with a fictionalized version of her, when the real woman shows up and finds out, she is understandably upset. But they're able to work together and solve the, you know, problem of that episode and move on. And so, yeah, both that's four episodes that from TNG that I feel tie in. Oh, are there more? You got more for me?
You forgot one that I feel like is probably the most crucial one of the whole the imagination run amok. And that is the episode season one, Next Gen, Where No Man Has Gone Before. That's where Kaczynski comes on with the Traveler, and they end up warping the ship into these different dimensions. And one of the particular dimensions, everybody's various imaginings come to life. Picard sees his grandmother. One woman is imagining she's a ballerina. You've got another guy who is playing with a full symphony orchestra. All of these things happening because their imaginations, you know, kind of run wild, and they have to kind of rein that back in, get control of themselves before they're able to actually see their solution, and the Traveler can get them out. So, again, as we can clearly see, Star Trek does this or some variation of this many, many times. And I'm always interested to see how that's going to play out. Even Voyager did their version of this where the captain is influenced by another alien race and her holodeck program is the focal point of that. She starts seeing holodeck characters outside of the holodeck. So, they all do it. And I don't know why that is like the continuing thread there for them, but you know, once I realized it, I've actually enjoyed it a lot. Of all the tropes that they could rehash over and over again, I enjoy this one of the, especially the heavier it is on the person's imagination taking over, not the classic computer malfunction, but more the imagination running amok. Because how do you control your imagination? How do you stop yourself from envisioning anything, you know? So and we got some great highlights here in this episode. My favorite has got to be Odo chasing what he calls a Goonji Jackdaw through the promenade. It's an emu. It's an emu.
But
for Star Trek, I understand Goonji. I just love the way he says it. He's just like, these Goonji Jackdaws. Like, he hates it so much. I absolutely loved it. You know, this is, again, it's a favorite early episode of mine for several different reasons. That starts it right there. What about you? Any call-outs? Any first impressions that really got you going with this one?
Oh, I just have to say the whole Bashir Jadzia Dax bit was just hilarious. I love that we went we start off with once again Bashir trying to talk to Jadzia, and this time she doesn't play coy. She friend zones him, and she does it in the classic line. I'm sure every guy has heard it from one woman he's liked one time or another. I like you like a friend, and he goes ugh. And he smiles, but he slumps backwards.
Like,
and
put
he's
a
just
stake
like,
through
right.
my heart.
He's like, I'm done. I know the line. I know what you're going to say. Like, I know this is it. Like, this is finally the last attempt to, like, try and get something romantic going here. And I'm just totally just out. Mm. And then that moment when Jadzia shows up and she's the romanticized version. And she is just all over him. And it's hilarious because he knows, like, she just friend-zoned me. There is something super-duper wrong. One of us must be sick. Like, literally, we have a disease for this to be happening. And then as soon as he gets called up, or the senior officers get called up to ops, he's like, you're trying to just get me in trouble with the rest of the group. You're just trying to make fun of me, aren't you? And he just storms out, basically, and she follows after him. And it's just hilarious because, again, we're hard on Bashir, and this is the one episode where it's like, this is truly rock bottom. The poor man has tried and failed, and even when she's there, he's like a good enough character to recognize that this isn't the real thing, and so he wants it but doesn't, like, and she even says to him, like, are you fighting this, Bashir? Why are you fighting this, Julian?
But it's like,
he's like, why am I fighting this?
Yeah, it's like the realization for any of us of a fantasy. Of course, you're going to question it, right? The thing that you have yearned for so long suddenly coming true. Of course, you're going to be like, oh, this is too good to be true. And this is exactly what we see of him in this situation. He's trying to figure out every single way out of this scenario, you know? And of course it dawns on him, oh, this is a joke. Oh yeah, we get called up to the ops and now everybody gets to have a good laugh at the doctor for being, you know, so dumb and taken in, only for it to become, you know, something else. And the whole interplay with Dax, Bashir, and fake Dax are great because, you know, she's just like, you know, later on we see him again and she's like, oh, she's just so submissive. Is that how you see me, Julian? Is that how you want me to be? And then, like, that interplay between Dax and fake Dax again, she's like, well, I'm just not a cold fish like you are. Like, all of it was just great, right?
Well, what's so funny, too, about that scene is when that scene is starting, the false Jadzia is off screen. And so she's like, so I don't want to give you a hard time, Bashir. Everyone has their fantasies. And, you know, honestly, fantasies are private. Like this, I feel like we are intruding upon you. And, you know, if this is unfair to you that we get to see into your fantasies. And then she turns it on him and the new one shows up and she's like, do you really see me like this? This is really what you want? It's like she totally pulls the rug out. She was being sympathetic, being like, I get it. I understand.
Yeah.
And I still don't like what you did.
Well, and it could be argued that she was fine with it right up until the new one showed up, you know?
Right.
Like being confronted by someone else's idealized version of you is probably not the best, which again goes back to your TNG episode, you know, when the real Leia Brahms shows up and sees the fake one that Geordi created, she's definitely incensed by his portrayal of her. We see this again when Barclay creates all of his various holo programs, and in one he has created the senior officers and they're like the Three Musketeers, but Will Riker is a short buffoonish caricature of himself, and Deanna is this lovely goddess-like visage, you know? So it's just they're more, you know, Riker was amused, of course, because he always is. Nothing bothers him. But, you know, everybody else was understandably upset.
We know he's been in there and done the same thing.
Oh, he's, probably worse. Let's just face it. Riker has definitely done some things.
Again, there's that episode where the idealized alien woman shows up on the ship and she's like, hey, Riker, would you be interested? And he's like, nope, but I'm going to the holosuite right now. Yep.
So again, we see this time and again, and this is probably, I think this is one of the more awkward ones, and probably because we get to see it for so long. You know, it's very drawn out here, and it's obviously very personal. So on the one hand, I did agree with Jadzia when she was saying, you know, hey, you know, we all have fantasies. We keep them private for a reason. It's not really fair that someone's private thoughts are suddenly broadcast without their permission and without their control. You know, he can't really help with the situation. Something's going on. So, yes. But, of course, the little bit of, you know, ribbing that she gives him later on, I also feel like was justly deserved because he does.
Oh, he deserves it. I just thought it was hilarious that she actually started off as coming off as sympathetic and, like, you know, insightful. Like, hey, you know, like, I was a guy too once.
Yeah.
Like,
it's that worldly seven lifetimes, multiple perspectives.
Yeah.
Symbiont that's making her that way.
Exactly. It's like the symbiote was the one that was actually sympathetic, and then the host personality pulled through and said, how dare you? that was hilarious. Of course, then there's Quark as well, and like when Odo is confronting him at the beginning of the episode, he's all like, you're disgusting. And Odo and Quark is like, yeah, it's a living. And he gets the two women following him around the entire episode, and he's, you know, they're fake, but hey, man,
he doesn't care.
The holosuite as much as anybody else, so what does he care?
And you know,
he's only upset when they disappear temporarily, and then they appear right back up.
And Quark also, he sums up Starfleet so well with this situation. He's, you know, when they first realize what's going on and Odo comes in to announce everybody, hey, stop using your imagination. You know, Quark is right there to be like, let me guess. Some clever new piece of Federation technology has gone amok and now they've turned the whole station into a holodeck. Like, he just, he nails it. Like, without being, you know, totally accurate, but, like, it's pretty much the summation of every Trek episode ever, right? Some clever Federation scientist somewhere did something, they were wrong, and now we've got this problem, right? It's great. His delivery of it is fantastic, and it's totally in keeping with him, too, because he's just like, I, you know what? I don't even care anymore. Like, these Federation types, they're nerds, and I'm just gonna have to accept that they're nerds, and this is the only time that their nerddom has really worked for me, so I'm gonna love it.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, it's hilarious too, because as soon as he's given that little like speech to Odo about the Federation, Odo's like, "Well, you know, all of your customers over there are winning every round of Dabo, so you might want to look into that." And Quark's like, "What?"
Yeah, suddenly the women disappear, because if there's one thing that's more important than women, it's money. So,
yeah,
that definitely is going to draw his attention.
And then finally, the other part with the Odo and Quark bit is, you know, Quark had been giving Odo a hard time, saying, "You have no imagination."
Yeah.
Before all this had happened, like, you wouldn't enjoy a holosuite because you have no imagination. And so when everything's going down, it's like Quark thinks, "Oh, yeah, everything is proving that to be true, because you don't seem to have anything here that would have the same effect. Like, there's no imaginative version of whatever Odo would want." And Odo goes back to his office, and there on the screen is Quark in a cell, screaming and ranting about being in there. And he said, and Quark, Odo says, "How did you get in there?" And Quark says, "You put me in here." And Odo says, "Yep, I did put you in there. No imagination, my butt."
Again, so many great things about this episode, which, you know, it's one of those episodes too that I think that very few people on the first watch will appreciate. It kind of falls into, especially when you look at overall rankings of episodes, it does kind of fall low, almost as bad as Move Along Home, which again was an episode when we covered it. I said, this is more, it's definitely more family oriented. It's more fun. This would be a great one too, that I would highlight as a way to get younger people, your kids and so forth, to into Star Trek to watch. This would be another episode that I would highlight for that precise reason. The fantastical, whimsical element of it for all the characters that we see, except for one, and we'll get to that one, but except for one, is great. I mean, even Jake, you know, when Jake first has Book Bakai follow him off of the out of the holosuites, and then later on in the episode we see Jake again. He's trying to do his homework, and Book Bakai shows up and he's like, "Yeah, you know, you're trying to do your homework, but you really wish that you could go and hit some balls with me, you know."
Right.
And who does, you know, Jake imagine but his own father? And he's like spinning all of these excuses for why he didn't get his homework done.
Yeah,
and
it's great.
It is great. Even Fake Cisco's like, "Now, do you really expect me to believe that?"
To believe.
He's like, "No," you know, and he has to stay. And it's great. Like, there, even that little bit of an interplay, I love.
Right. Just like, oh, it's fantastic. And he like knows it's a fake version of his dad. Like, he isn't like, "Oh my goodness, what are you?" He's like, "Ah, it's a fake version of my dad, but it's a great way for me to test out what would work and not work with dad." So,
And he's such a good kid that even his imagination's like, "Don't try it. You know better."
Yeah.
You know,
it's
great. I love the interplay, and it's like, I need my kid and like every kid to watch this. You see that? Even the kid knows that dad's not going to be fooled by that. Remember that.
Yeah, exactly.
In addition to that, the one character, of course, that does not seem to have a very good imagination, in my opinion, is Kira. Kira's one imagining that we see is a upper pylon exploding, and there's this giant fireball that almost kills her. You know, that's the only time we see her imagine anything. Everybody else is something else, and she's imagining death and a man on fire. It's like, oh my god, like, this woman is traumatized for real. We need to really work on her imagination, because man, that was just awful. Just scary. Man.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, just a quick follow-up, though, is that it's when Sisko says to her that, you know, this is all fake, that the station stops shaking. But you're right, like, everyone seemed to believe that something was going on, so it's not like it was her specifically that was causing it. But, yeah, she didn't have any particular thing going on.
And you also, that point, too, I wanted to talk about, and the fact that she gives another she delivers a line which can almost be seen as a fourth wall, you know, break, because she starts talking about the station is having some kind of oscillation, and she says it, and then she's like, "What the hell does that mean?" You know, and it's just that little bit. It's like she was almost like she's criticizing the technobabble, right? And I was like, she reads off this line perfectly, and then just says, "Well, what the hell does that mean?" It was great. I love the underplay of that as well. You know, And talk about figuring it all out. Everybody gets totally consumed by this thing, and yet Sisko's the one who sees that it's just fake, right?
Right.
And he's making everybody else now believe it's fake.
Right.
What? I have watched that scene so many times and thought about it so many times. I keep trying to pinpoint the moment that he suddenly realized this was a fake thing occurring. I don't really see right. anything that would give it away.
I know exactly what you mean. I literally just watched it before we recorded, and there is definitely the moment where he like says, "Hey, Dax, when you were talking about some particular point of data, it's that around that time that things started to get weirder and weirder." And it's like something triggers that, but I do agree that it's like it just kind of happens. In fact, if I would criticize this episode, is that everything was manifesting as real, like they were physically interacting with everything, and so that black hole was real. For them to just stop believing in it is a little bit too easy because, again, everything else had been proven to be physical and realistic. It just was coming in and out of existence. So yeah, the fact that they realize they can de-manifest things, I guess that makes sense, but I wouldn't say it's as simple as just being like, obviously, we just do it, and then that's it.
That'd be my only criticism, too. They don't give us enough hints or clues along the way to let us clue into why. And Sisko's sudden, snap inspiration, there just wasn't enough there.
Right. Because, too, there's no reason up to that point to disbelieve that that is the cause of everything that's been happening. Yeah.
Yeah, and he just happens upon this like, man, what a strong-willed, strong-minded individual he must be for this to work for him, because there is nothing. Even when he's talking with Bakai, when he's following him around, he does seem to kind of lose himself a little bit and become immersed in the baseball talk. Even when he tries to dismiss it at first, he can't resist. He's an avid fan, and he just gets lost in that love of the sport, which seems to be totally genuine. Like, I have to admit, they did Avery Brooks does a really great job of communicating his fandom, Cisco's fandom. I don't know much about baseball. I don't know much of the terms they were talking about, but man, did he just really kind of lean into it and go for it. And I to the point where I was wondering if Avery Brooks was actually a baseball fan. Like, I think he does a really good job of communicating that.
He certainly plays the part right in those scenes. Yeah, when Buck is talking to him and he's like, "I remember every game. Like, how can I remember?" He's like, "Well, I programmed every stat." And he's like, "Well, there were 300 people in the stands the day that I had hit that one home run." And Sisko says, "But when I did it, I was 301 people. I was there." But it's funny because, Bakai says, "That really meant a lot to me that you were there," which is like, do they truly have a relationship on some level? Like, the Holosuite version does know Ben and does know Jake, and therefore this truly is somehow a manifestation of the Holosuite character. So actually, I will say that for me, I do find that the conclusion of, it was some sort of alien being that was manifesting these imaginative things, and then they never really say what they are. They just end the episode by saying, "We'll tell you next time." Like, we don't have time to finish in this episode.
Yeah.
We got to wrap this up. We got to go. So I felt like that was also the other thing for me. And that's more, for me, it's more of a critique than, Sisko suddenly being like, "I realize what's happening." Okay, fine. Every time, every episode will have that moment of they figure it out. But when they don't really give us a true resolution about why and who, I was like, bummer. I mean, everything else was pretty fun. This was a fun episode. Yeah. But that was the one disappointment I had.
This episode also does another thing that I really enjoy, and that's where we get to see the officers sitting together and talking through the problem. We see everybody sitting in Cisco's office, and they're kind of a semicircle there talking to Sisko about what they've discovered so far, what they believe may or may not work, and they're kind of debating it and batting it around. I love
and Kira's standing,
scenes.
Kira's standing with her back to everybody, she's thinking, and then has a moment where she's like, "Wait a minute, we can't do this because that would destroy Bajor."
Yeah,
and Cisco's like, "Look, we've already got that as a possibility. Yeah. We got to do something."
Right.
Great moment. Yeah, very, very much a TNG kind of. We're sitting around the table talking for a minute session.
And we get to see more of Cisco's office. I mean, for the most part, all we ever really see is that big desk and, the giant window and his chair and everything. Now we get to see kind of off to the sides, wings a bit. Man's got a couch in there. He's got some chairs, and it's like a comfortable little setting he's got on this wing of his office. So,
yeah.
Again, I just enjoy. He's got his own ready room. Yeah. I enjoy being able to see, you know, the expansion of their living space, their working space. You know, sometimes they get so focused on giving us these very close spaces. And I understand that, you know, probably production costs and all the rest of it that go into making that decision. But when it comes to trying to get us to really immerse in the world, to me, that's the best way to do it, to show that, you know, when they pan around, it's not just a cheesy backdrop or we're going to see backstage production and, you know, cardboard or whatever, but there's more of a room there.
Right.
You know, and as I had mentioned before, you know, that whole soundstage, the promenade, all that stuff was all built together. You know, so right. It is a very complete set, and I like when they, you know, show us more of that. You know, I enjoy those kind of scenes so much. We see that a little bit in Next Generation when they did the Pen Pals episode, everybody in Picard's quarters. You know, we've talked about that episode before on our show. Yes. Again, that's why I love it, those kind of roundtable discussions that are not in the conference room. I enjoy the conference room scenes, but for some reason when it's in their quarters or in somewhere that's a bit more of a personal, intimate setting, those tend to resonate more with me than anything else. So this is our first time we get to see it in Deep Space Nine, and I hope it continues.
Yeah.
So, in an episode full of fun moments and great overall performances, who do you feel like gave the best performance? Who was our standout for this one?
I mean, one thing I like about this episode is I feel like this was one of the first episodes I feel like truly every character had a moment, mm-hmm. like really had a standout.
Yeah.
Dax, Bashir, Odo, and Quark. In fact, they were kind of like little pairs mm-hmm. even. We got to see O'Brien and Keiko again. Like, we haven't seen Keiko, I think, since episode 2. And his daughter, Molly, which was super cute. That little actress looks like she's about 3, and she was perfect in the part. She's great. Yeah, everyone was fantastic. I think I would agree with you, though, that Kira, I mean, last episode was her episode, so it's like, okay, she gets a break this episode, but she's the only one who, like, kind of isn't as much there as everybody else. And I think I think it was last episode or something, it's like, you know, Dax hasn't really been in a whole lot. Like, this was the most Dax I think I've really seen, honestly, in an episode. Which is hilarious because half of her being there is a fake version. So I still feel bad for it. And I have to say too, like I might have said it earlier, but like the fake one is not a true copy of Dax. She never does anything like scientific. She's just fawning all over Bashir the whole time. Like if they had made it so that she and like the real Dax had to like work together because they both have the same knowledge set or skill level, that'd have been interesting, but instead it's just some
cheap
fake
copy.
Version of
right.
yeah.
It's Bashir
just,
imagines
it's just a visual
it, right?
version. Yeah, well, yeah, right. It's just a physical manifestation of her, not anything else. Which actually, so as I think about it, I don't know. Would you say maybe these beings are like djinn, you know, genies? I mean, this is called If Wishes Were Horses. Are they granting wishes to everybody, or is it just?
Well, I guess in a sense, it's, you know, obviously I think for Bashir, we could say this is a wish granted. He was fantasizing about Jadzia being into him, and there she is, you know, poof, there she is. The others, I feel like, are kind of disconnects because, you know, we have a story being read to a child and then this character becoming manifest. So did O'Brien really imagine this, like, for himself? Or was this just because it was the last thing that was kind of lingering, floating around in his mind, and this alien was able to access it because it was a fresh thought, right?
Right.
And then Buck Bacai, he's even further removed because Sisko was working. He wasn't thinking about baseball or anything else. Jake brought Buck Bacai home, you know?
Right.
So he had no real connection there. That connection between those two is formed later in the episode when they finally get a chance to, you know, talk ball for a while. So, I wouldn't really say that they're granting any wishes because, you know, only one of the three really seemed to have a vested interest in keeping their imagination, their figment around. The other ones, they just, you know, obviously O'Brien definitely wanted his to go away. He seemed very annoyed. but Sisko was just more like, you know, hey, He's rolling with it, which is a classic Cisco kind of move that we've seen a lot.
Yeah,
he doesn't really seem to get bothered by much. He's just like, as long as, you know, he even tells him, you know, one way or another, we're going to figure this out. And either A, you're still going to be here, and that's a whole other problem, and we'll deal with that when it happens. Or, hey, you're going to disappear, and then this won't, we won't have to worry about this anymore. So that seems to be his stable, you know, mindset. And I have to admit, for you know, a Starfleet officer who we know that Starfleet officers go through crazy things all the time, on the one hand, it seems really cool that he doesn't get flustered by much. On the other hand, it kind of makes him seem a little jaded that nothing gets to him. He's just like, well, you know, it's a random, another Tuesday, so whatever. Yeah, exactly. You know?
Right, right. Yeah, actually, I want to go back to this. It kind of makes me think about, you know, at the end of the episode, when it's revealed that there's some sort of alien beings that caused this to happen. When this episode started, because they were, Odo and Quark were talking about the holosuites, Quark was saying, I'm looking to expand the holosuite that I have. I'm going to get more space, and I'm going to get these generators to help me do more. So when this episode starts, they basically give you a red herring by saying that the holosuite are going to be what's causing what happens. And it's kind of backed up by the fact that Jake was in there when his, you know, person, you know, follows him home, and Bukai follows him home. So that is what you seem to think. So throughout the episode, that is what I thought was going to be the reveal. And so again, I'm disappointed the reveal wasn't that. But then I also know that part of the reason why they probably didn't have it be that answer is because that would have contradicted the episodes with Moriarty, because the whole point of the Moriarty episodes was that they couldn't get the holosuite characters to manifest outside the holosuite or holodeck. I keep saying holosuite, I mean holodeck on Enterprise. But yeah, so I understand that they needed to come up with a good reason for why things happened, other than what they would have contradicted their other answers. But I still would have preferred that answer, because I think that's just more interesting, because they didn't follow up pretty well with the answer they gave. But whatever.
Well, no, I completely agree. I think that, you know, it also kind of, one of the things that I'm going to nitpick the most, too, is going to be the fact that they really don't give us much more of an explanation about those aliens. You know, we only really see, like you already hinted at this earlier, but we only really see those two scenes. We see the one where the three alien / figments have gotten together, and they're kind of, you know, talking about, you know, they've now alluded to there being something else about them,
right?
You know, and
the mid-episode twist,
yeah. And then of course we see at the end where Bukai is waiting in Ben's office and kind of is like cluing him in, hey, we're aliens, we're explorers too, we came through the wormhole, so forth, right. But it's just like, again, they didn't give us enough, and I understand that, again, this is most likely them trying to make a separation difference. This is not holograms going crazy or any of that, you know, so they had to give it a tweak somehow, and this was the DS9's writer's attempt at doing that. So
yeah, and again, to be fair, you know, so many shows like this, you have to get back to whatever the status quo is before the next episode starts, because if you start changing too much of what the status quo is, then you're actually in a serialized story. You know, each episode is building on the previous, but shows like this are primarily episodic. You know, what happens in one episode is usually confined to that episode. So I get it. I think a deeper storytelling would have been with the holosuite and acting up, as opposed to some unexplained aliens being the answer. But again, like I said, whatever. It was a great episode otherwise. And yeah, hopefully, I mean, I imagine we won't see these aliens ever again.
Unfortunately,
next season,
no. Well, unfortunately, yeah, no. We don't. We don't. But I will say, just to go back to my other question to you, my answer is going to be Bashir. I feel like Bashir gives the standout performance in this episode. We get to see a very, you know, it's a personal invasion for him, how he handles it, how he surmounts it to, you know, end up working with everyone else to figure out what's going on. In spite of the fact that this, again, very personal thing has just been displayed for everyone. So, you know, trying to put myself in his shoes, I couldn't imagine the embarrassment of your your fantasy coming to life. Not only just coming to life, but then following you around everywhere. You know, good Lord.
And not being subtle about it at
not
all.
At all. Yeah. Not at all. So, yeah, I think that Bashir, so I think this is actually the first time that Bashir has gotten the high praise here. Yeah. Not the underdog coming in at the end, but just consistently all of his scenes in this episode, I feel like he did a very good job. Very nice portrayal of a person who, you know, is trying to overcome this embarrassment. So yeah,
I have to agree. I think he is. We see him humbled in this episode and him being awkward, but you know he's not being irritating or a jerk when he's trying to pitch his, you know, relationship status to Jadzia, and he accepts it when she turns him down. And it's, you know, he does his typical Bashir thing. He cares super. He really cares when the fake Jadzia falls down and has a concussion. He cares for her like she's a real person. In fact, again, I think it kind of goes back to the episode kind of being the logic not making quite as much sense. Because if she exists because he believes in her, in the moment that she disappears, he is treating her as if she has a real concussion. It's like, but I mean, that speaks more to Bashir's character than it does to the episode's writing, I would say. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as he was concerned, she had a concussion and he had to take care of her, and don't fall asleep, you know, you got to stay awake. So yeah, I agree with you there.
So then who is our you know, again, the opposite, the least, someone we don't need or didn't need at all in this episode?
I think we've already hit on, I think Kira is the one that, yeah, I mean, not that she's bad, but she just, everyone else had more of a chance to shine in this episode. Even Jake did. Than she did. So.
Which, you know, just again, could, it could just
last
be
the, episode, yeah, she was fantastic.
I was going to say, she might have just been tired. Who knows? They were filming these episodes back to back, and she's just like, look, I don't want to do anything. This one, give me a break.
Both the character and the actress,
Oh, and one other thing. Did you notice the hours when they were talking and doing everything? It's late. Like, this whole episode takes place in the evening for them. Think about it.
Really?
From the very first moment in the episode, it's Bashir and Jadzia are having dinner when the episode starts. Later on in the episode, when they are having that meeting, the powwow in the office, they are, it's 2200 hours, 11 o'clock. It's 11 o'clock at night, and they are nowhere near close to whatever. Actually, it might actually be earlier than that, because they're on the Bajoran timescale, and Bajoran timetable is 26 hours, not 24. So they have two extra hours in their day. So, whatever.
Fair enough.
But still, it's late, or getting later. So, you know, it's just
Jake's at home doing his homework.
At home, it's the winding down of the evening. You know, that's why Jake was in the holodeck in the first place. It was after school, after his homework was done, he went to the holodeck. So, I love that even that little bit gives us a more immersive worldview. They're doing all this stuff, and it's at night. And then I kept thinking to myself, too, like, why are all of the main officers still working late at night? You know, like, do y'all not have shifts? Shouldn't y'all be doing something else? And, like, clearly it's Jadzia's shift, because she finished dinner and reported to ops. No one called her. She wasn't summoned for anything. She just reported to ops. So that seems to be the normal time that she's working. So again, I just like that we're seeing a basically a night episode. I guess it's kind of an assumption that most things with Trek are, it's during the day, it's midday, whatever. But if you track the storyline for this one, everything is occurring at night.
Yeah. And they kept it consistent. Like, I didn't notice that until you really started saying it. But yeah, the episode was consistent on that point. So the writing knew to, they didn't make mistakes on that point.
Yeah. So a lot of differences here for what they did, as what we've seen in other Trek, TNG, the original series, and so forth. But a lot of great similarities, a lot of things that we can track from one series to the next. How would you overall rate this episode?
I would say this is definitely in the top episodes so far. I think the pilot still stands out as the best so far, and then last episode, Progress was the name of the last episode. I would say Progress seems to be my second favorite, only simply because it was such a hard-hitting story. The writing was just fantastic. This one isn't quite there, but it's like in the top episodes, simply because we got every character, we had some fun writing, we had some good storytelling. Overall, was just a fun episode. Nothing to really critique or be upset about. Yeah, I like this one a lot.
So again,
why would you say this one's your favorite?
So I will tell you why it's my favorite here. Yeah, but first, you know, like I said, this episode that kind of tends to rank a little bit lower in regards to first season episodes for Trek.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Not as bad as Move Along Home, but still a lower one. I think people are just because it is so similar in a lot of ways to TNG episodes, especially the earlier ones. I think this may be why this one kind of strikes a low note when people are like, oh, this is just a, you know, cut and paste of that. When you're looking for something different, I can see how that might hold you up a bit. But as to why this is my favorite episode, I will now tell my story. I told you I had a little anecdote, you know. Last episode, I told you I was going to tell you what happened. So the reason this is my favorite episode is because 3 years ago, I have seen this show many, many, many times, as we all know. And, of course, I still watch it. So 3 years ago, I was watching this particular episode, and at the time I was watching it, my daughter was sitting with me watching it. And of course, the first part of the episode is the O'Briens at home reading the story of Rumpelstiltskin to Molly. Yes. Well, it just so happens that the night before, I had also read Rumpelstiltskin to my daughter. So we had already gone through this. So when this part of the show started and they were saying the name Rumpelstiltskin and reading the story, I just happened to be watching my daughter and I watched her perk up, you know, like suddenly the show was for her, right? She was just interested listening to this story and watching this little girl have this reaction to Rumpelstiltskin, right? And I'm loving it because I'm like, yes, my kid is a Trekkie. And just like, it's so great. You know, I'm totally glossing over that the real reason she's paying attention is the Rumpelstiltskin story, not Star Trek, right? Yeah. So, of course, we get to the part where Molly is a little bit scared, you know, and then she comes out of the room talking about Rumpelstiltskin's in her room, right? And my daughter jumps up and she goes over to the TV and she starts rubbing the TV like she's rubbing Molly. And she's like, don't worry, Molly. He's not real. And she's telling the TV this. And I'm like dying because I know what's coming. Right. And it's one of those moments where I wish I had grabbed my phone, grabbed something to record it. Because, of course, I knew what was coming. But I did nothing. Like, I didn't want to spoil it. So I'm like, you should have seen me. I'm like poised on my couch, just perched, just waiting because I know what's coming. And so then the next scene, of course, happens and Rumpelstiltskin is revealed. And my daughter freaked. She immediately just turned around. And she's like, what? He's real. He's real. And flipped out that Rumpelstiltskin was on TV. And I lost it. I think I laughed for a good 20 minutes.
That's hilarious.
It was great. And ever since that time, this has been my favorite. Every time I watch it, I get to that point. I can't help but smile. I can't help but chuckle.
My
daughter is 6 years old now. I still bring it up. Every time that this episode comes up, I watch it. And I'm like, hey, do you remember? Do you know? You know, and of course, she's just, I mean, she's totally done with me. She doesn't care. But for me, as a parent, as a Star Trek fan, this was like a great moment for me. And so, this is why this one will always be one of my favorite episodes. I don't care what anybody else says. It was such a cute, endearing moment with my kid. I just loved it. Yeah. So, this is why.
Too bad you don't have a camera. You don't have a camera on her at all times.
Oh, right. It's like the one time that I wasn't, you know, didn't have something glued to me that I could snap a picture or record a video. And it was just this priceless moment. And, just as seriously, like her face when he came on, and it was like the fear and all, the recognition and all of it just all at once. I really wish I had been able to record that because I would be playing it today. I'd be playing it right now. But it was great.
If it's just the audio, we would just listen. To the audio,
But you should have seen her cute little hands all waved. He's real. He's real. Just like, calm down. It's a show. And she watched the whole rest of the episode. She wanted to see Rumpelstiltskin go away. Like, what happened?
Yes.
You know, so
we
got to that. It's the first episode.
Yeah, there's that moment. Right, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's the first episode of Trek that I got her to watch from beginning to end. She watched the whole thing all for the Rumpelstiltskin storyline.
Yeah. Yeah, and Rumpelstiltskin is still, he's still creepy like the character, even though he's being personified by some creepy alien creature. Mm-hmm. At the very end, he's like, I'll take Molly to solve your problem. I want a daughter. Yeah, I can imagine that for your daughter, that could be a little freaky. And then to have it him pop and go away, and we solved it, and he's not there anymore. Right. They were, our good guys won. Yeah, that's great.
Very important. But yes, so this would be it for me on that. So I hope everybody enjoyed me gushing a little bit over my kid and just how cute she is.
She is cute. I can fully say, full of energy, lovely. Great personality. She's going to be a killer, and she's older.
Oh, God. Don't. I don't even want to think about it. But, yeah, I promise to keep the child stories to a minimum. All right? So there. I won't be the, one of those parents that brings your kid into everything.
Don't make promises you can't keep.
Well, I'm thinking that's going to bring us to a close. I hope everybody has a safe holiday. Please remember to, you know, wash your hands and all that other good stuff when you're around all the people, regardless of where you fall politically on the COVID stuff and Omicron, 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 well,
you
whatever.
You should do that anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You should do that anyway. You shouldn't be touching food and people and whatever else with dirty hands. So wash your hands. Just keep clean. All right. And we will catch you back here next time. And of course, as always, find us on Twitter, Facebook, all the social medias as The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. You guys take care.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.